Right. No, but of all seriousness, he's a friend. I view him as a friend, and it's you can, as sure as you can imagine, for anybody that has a chaver that they've known when they're young, and to see them grow and to see what they do for Klal Yisrael, it's just, it's a great thing. It's a great feeling for me. So it's very, very personal. I'm really, really grateful that he was able to come this morning. And of course, as we all learned last year for our shul, this is a very, very special thing. As you all learned last year in the video, if you saw the video, the 100-year anniversary video, Rav Shai Shachter's grandfather was a Rav of our very shul. And one of its iterations going back 60, 70 years ago. And Rav Hirschel Shachter spent a few of his formidable years here, not in Northeast Philadelphia, downtown, in our shul. And you can go watch the video. It's still prominently on our website, on the homepage. You can watch the video where I interviewed Rav Hirschel Shachter at his house. And apparently there were things that he said that even no one knew at the time. Even his own mishpacha, so I hear some things. But so this is personal to us, personal to me, and it's a great, great opportunity for us. I want to acknowledge the presence of Rebbetzin Brisman, who's here this morning. Rav Dov Aaron Brisman, the Rebbetzin's late husband, who was nifter last year, whose first yortzeit is coming up this coming weekend. And this year has been sponsored Le'ila Nishmas, Rabbi Brisman, Rav Aaron Dov, Ben HaRav Shimon, his Hashem HaShehaven Aliyah. Rabbi Brisman, I knew him for the last few years as a member of the Vada Kashrus, and I had this list to drive him to Kashrus meetings, whether it's in Lower Merion or wherever it was. And all the other Rabbanim told me was, it's a shame you missed him in his heyday. You know, it's a shame you didn't know him 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And so I got a glimpse of the greatness of who he was, and I can only imagine that everything that they say about him was most probably true, because he was such an incredible, first of all, someone who was like an encyclopedia of knowledge. But I saw with my own eyes the shilas that he would get from around the world, and he would sit in his desk in his basement and answer them. And just also, just such a baal midos, just someone who was just so humble, you know, just, you could tell, you could sense you were in the presence of a gadol. And it's a loss. He was the Rav of the Young Israel of Elkins Park. He was the head of our Vada Kashas. He was the Av Bezdin in Philadelphia. And it was a tremendous, tremendous loss to our community with his passing last year. And we are grateful to have this opportunity to sponsor this year, right around this first Yortzai, Le'ila Nishmaso. Again, I thank the Rebbetzin for coming this morning. It's a kavod that you're here. It's also a kavod that the Rosh Kollel is here. And Rabbi Shon from the Kollel, the new executive director, is here this morning. It's a great kavod to have all of us here. But I just want to say to everybody that this is not a lecture. This is not a time to sit back and to be entertained. Elul, Rosh Hashanah, is in 2 weeks. We're here to be inspired. We're here to be motivated. We're here to take this information and just focus on how we can better ourselves to make sure that this year is a better year than the year before. And without further ado, I have to call up Rabbi Shachter.
Good morning, everybody. It's a real pleasure. It's a humbling pleasure to be here. And I thank Rabbi Yemens for initiating this opportunity for me. As he said in his introduction, which was not recorded, he never thought anything would come of me, but I always knew something would become of him. And Ashreichem, how lucky you are to have a Mura D'Asra, to have a Rav who was able to guide you, who was able to lead you, who from the time, I can't say when he was smaller, because he was never small, from the time that he was younger, we always knew that he was going to use his passion to inspire and to infuse his wisdom to others. And how lucky you are to have somebody here who is able to lead you and share so much value that he has to give and to share with your kehila. I can only echo the sentiment. It's very personal for me. I was not aware of my family's roots here in this shul until I watched the video last year. And I'm grateful to Rabbi Yemens for bringing it to our family's attention. And it really was a very special opportunity for us to learn a little bit more about my father's history, about his upbringing. I'll be honest, growing up in the home of somebody like my father, we don't really have so much small talk in the house. It's just not really what we do so often. Usually when we speak to him, it's about very substantive conversations about things that he's busy with, about shilas he's dealing with, about issues that are going on. He doesn't often talk to us about where he grew up and the stories surrounding that upbringing. And to us, it was an eye-opening experience to listen a little bit to what it was that he recollected from those years growing up in Philadelphia. So it's special for me to be here, and once again, I thank you. And of course, the Zikaron for Rabbi Brisman, I hope that our Divrei Torah today will be an Ilui HaNeshama for him. And Rebbetzin, I thank you so much for coming and for being a part of the Harbatzas Torah of this community, as your husband was one of the pioneers that really made so much of the spiritual fabric of what this community is all about be what it is today. So this is only just a continuation of everything that his legacy taught us. On Rosh Hashanah, when we talk in the davening, one of the phrases that we mention is Zeh Hayom Tchilas Ma'asecha. What does it mean, Zeh Hayom Tchilas Ma'asecha? It means that today is the beginning of creation. Hayom Haras Olam. Today is the birthday of the world. So let's go all the way back to the opening parsha, to the opening story of the very first human being. Let's go back to Zeh Hayom Tchilas Ma'asecha. How did it all start? So we know that Adam HaRishon was created. And by the way, it's a fascinating thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God created Adam HaRishon. And he took an unimaginable risk in doing so. When he created Adam HaRishon, he basically handed over the ability for a person, for a human being, to do as he chooses, to have Bechira Chavshis, which means not everything is going to be as God wished it to be. A human being has the ability to make a decision, to make a choice, and that sort of complicates our existence. You know, one of the tefillos that we say on Rosh Hashanah, which everybody is familiar with, V'chol ma'aminim. Many shul sing it, many shul say it, but we're all familiar with the words. The very first phrase, V'chol ma'aminim shehu el emuna. It goes in the Seder Aleph Beis. It goes in the order of the Aleph Beis, a sequence. Everybody believes, anybody who knows just a little bit about Dikduk will understand that you have trouble translating that phrase. Let's translate it together. V'chol ma'aminim, and all believe, shehu, that he is an el emuna. What does that even mean? He's a God of faith? It should say, we are all people who believe with faith in a God. How do you translate that phrase? And the truth is, it really is a borrowed terminology from the pasuk in Parshas Ha'azinu. We're going to read it in a few weeks. When the Torah tells us that the Ribono Shel Olam, God, is referred to as an El Emunah Ve'ein Avel. What does that mean? Ask the Medrash. How do you translate that phrase, El Emunah? What does it mean? It's not a description of God. That's a description of our belief in Him. Writes the Medrash, you know what it means? Shehemin Ba'olama Ubaro. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, believed in humanity, and that is why He created him. It took a tremendous amount of belief in humanity to want to create us. It doesn't really make sense. Why should HaKadosh Baruch Hu create an entity in the world that is able to undo everything that He made that is perfect and good? A human being has the ability to ruin this world. Look at the news every day. For anyone who is silly enough to follow the news in our country, and you see how the world continues to disintegrate and unravel, and you see, Ein yom she'ein kilolasa yoser mechadero, you don't see anything positive. Every single day, something worse than the day before. There's a shooting here, a shooting there. Chaos. The whole world is turning into chaos. Why did the Ribono Shel Olam create us? To ruin His beautiful world? To destroy everything? He created us because Shehemin Ba'olama Ubaro. Because He believed in humanity. He believed in our capacity to do something positive, to contribute to the world in a positive way, to make it a better place than it was before we got here. That is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us, which is the same reason that every morning when we wake up, we say Mode Ani, and we end that phrase by saying Mechemla Rabba Emunasecha. What this phrase means is, I am so proud to be a part of a religion where the God of my religion believes in me. Rabba Emunasecha doesn't mean I have a tremendous amount of faith in God, but it means He has a tremendous amount of faith in me. And because of that, I am proud. I am proud to be a part of a religion, to be associated with an entity, with a Ribono Shel Olam, that believes in me, that believes there's something I can do, which is why He created Adam HaRishon in the first place. So let's go back to that original story. As we know, didn't take very long for Adam HaRishon to do something that he should not have done. By the way, the Meshech Chachma points out, what is the first instruction that was given to Adam HaRishon? Many people mistakenly say, first instruction was, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. Incorrect. First instruction he was given was, Mikol Eitz Hagan Achol Tochel. Take advantage of everything in the world. Enjoy this beautiful world that I've put you in. And then there was a caveat to that, which was, Mikol Eitz Hagan Achol Tochel, but from this one you should not eat. The Ribono Shel Olam wants us to appreciate his world. And Adam HaRishon failed at that mission. He failed at his mission. And he took no responsibility. And that was the terrible sin of Adam HaRishon, to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vayikra Elokim Ela Adam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God calls out to Adam HaRishon, Vayomer Lo Ayeka. And Rashi is bothered. What exactly does it mean that God had to look for Adam HaRishon? He couldn't find him? There was only two human beings in the world at the time. Was it so hard to locate Adam HaRishon together with his wife Chava? Rashi says, of course, this was just a way of engaging Adam HaRishon in conversation. God did not have any trouble finding Adam HaRishon. God has no trouble finding any of us. He knows exactly where all of us are at all times. And says Rashi, this was only a way to engage Adam HaRishon in conversation. But the Alshech, in his commentary on Chumash, writes, perhaps this is not to be understood in a geographical context. Ayeka, where are you? I can't find you. But rather, he says, this was really a call as a character assessment, as a character evaluation. Where are you, Adam HaRishon? You were created by the hand of God Himself. You are the most pristine, perfect, pure human being. How is it possible that you had fallen so low? How could it be that you have lost your bearings, that you don't know where you are, that you have sunk so low in such a short amount of time? That was the question that was being posed to Adam HaRishon. And as Jews, it's important that every so often we stop and ask ourselves that resounding, penetrating question of Ayeka. Where are we? Where are we? We were all created with Tzelem Elokim. The Navi writes, Elokim asa es ha'adam yashar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God created us all to be straight, to be honest, upstanding human beings. V'heim bikshu cheshbonos rabim. Something goes wrong in many people's lives. Nobody in this room, but other people out there in the world, something seems to go wrong where that straight path that they were created on doesn't seem to really be the journey of their lives. And that is the question we all need to ask. There's a story told about the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, where he said he was once in a jail, and the jail warden came over to him, and he saw that he was studying Tanakh all the time. He was sitting there with the Sefer, and he went to the Baal HaTanya, and he said, are you a believer in God? He says, yes. And he says to the Baal HaTanya, well, then I have a major question for you. Go to the very first parsha in the Torah, and do you believe God couldn't find Adam HaRishon? How do you believe in a God that couldn't even locate the one human being that he created? And the Baal HaTanya responded, and he said, I believe in the eternal nature of the Torah. And I believe that the Torah speaks to us in every generation. And I believe that that call to Adam HaRishon was not a call just to Adam. It was a call to every subsequent human being that has come into the world since that time. It's a call for every human being to be able to answer. We all need to be able to look back and say, where are we? Where are we? Especially, of course, in Chodesh Elul, by the Yom Noraim, Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippurim, Yimei HaSlichos, we need to ask ourselves, where are we in our relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, with God Himself? It's not an easy question to answer. For those who may have grown up in a religious home, it can be sometimes a very different challenge than those who may have grown up in an irreligious home and came to an understanding on their own. I can tell you from my own experience, I grew up in a home, my parents are religious, always were religious, my grandparents also were the same, both of them were rabbis on both sides, great recognized personalities. And it's a great challenge growing up in a home like that. You may not imagine, but it's a very different kind of challenge. Is this religion going to be something that's ever meaningful to me? Is God ever going to mean something to me? Or is it only going to be relegated my entire life to being, my father and mother are great people and they are very closely connected? It's like we say in Oz Yashir every day, there's a relationship of Elokei Avi V'Arom Emenu. There are some people, you speak to them, and their whole lives, all they talk about is, I remember my great-grandparents, the way they used to sit around the Seder table, and I remember the way they used to keep Shabbos and light the Shabbos candles. I remember my grandmother crying while she used to light Shabbos. All these different great, beautiful memories. Never do they take a step back to ask themselves, well, how does that translate into the experience of my life? It's very nice that I have an existence of Elokei Avi. But what about Zeh Keli Va'anveyu? What about my God? Does God actually mean anything to me? Do I have any sort of relationship with him? As children, my father told us very often, and he's such a humble person, so he never told us that it had any relation to our lives. He just told us a nice insight, nice idea, and he expected us to understand where it was headed. The Gemara tells us when a melech, when a king, takes upon himself the mantle of leadership. So he has many different instructions that he's given in the beginning, but one of them is he has to write a Sefer Torah. He has to commission the writing of a Sefer Torah. V'karabo kol yemei chayev. He has to have that Sefer Torah with him at all times. Wherever he goes, wherever he travels, it always needs to travel with him. Writes the Gemara, what happens if this king got the kingship from his father? And he got it b'Yerusha. He got it because he's the next of kin. He's the next in the line of heirs. He's the closest to the throne, and he takes on the mantle of leadership after his father passes away. And his father didn't only leave him the kingdom, but his father also left him the Sefer Torah. Does he have to write his own? Says the Gemara, yes. Gemara in Sanhedrin. Even if one's father or mother happened to have left them a written Sefer Torah, and now it's yours. Mitzvah sheyichdav mishalo. This week's parsha, Parsha's Vayelech. We have to write a Sefer Torah on our own. What is that all about? My father always told us, even if your parent had a deep relationship with Torah or with the Ribono Shel Olam, that doesn't excuse you from writing your own Sefer Torah. You need to find meaning, passion, enthusiasm, understanding, excitement in what this relationship means to you, not only to your parents, to your grandparents, to those memories of those who came before you, but to think about, in practical terms, what this relationship means to you on a very personal level. And afal pi shehinichu lo avav sefer Torah, even if our parents may have left us a rich legacy, a heritage of whatever it is that the Torah or God meant to them, that's insufficient. That's where we start. But beyond that, we need to find meaning and passion on our own. So the truth is, when thinking about that question of Ayeka, when trying to consider where are we and where are we headed, and where is our relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam? The answer to that at various stages in our lives can be very different. There's a medrash that tells a story about a Roman aristocratic woman, a Matrona Achas, that sat on one occasion next to Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta, one of the great Tanoim. And she turns to him and she says, L'kama yamim bara HaKadosh Baruch Hu es olamo. How many days did it take God to create the world? And he turns back to her quizzically and he wonders, everybody knows that. Everybody knows. Kisheshes yamim asa Hashem asa shamayim v'asa aretz. God created the world in 6 days. The seventh day he rested. What's your question? And she turns back and she says, well, if we're in agreement that it only took him 6 days to create the world, and look what happened, then me'az v'ad ata mahu osa. It's been a long time since the end of that 6 day. What has the Ribono Shel Olam been busy with ever since? What does he do all day? Everything's running, everything's working. So what does he do now? And the response, the reaction that Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta gave this woman was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Yoshe Va'ose Sulamos. God is making ladders. What does it mean he's making ladders? Mashpi lazeh umeirim lazeh. The Ribono Shel Olam is elevating, raising, advancing one person and reducing, demoting, lowering somebody else. And that's what he's doing all day long. Among other things that the Medrash lists there. But this is the first item that is mentioned. What does it mean that God is making ladders? It means that at different stages of our lives, we feel that our relationship is very different. There are times when we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we feel a tremendous sense of closeness. We feel his compassion for us. We see it. There are other times, unfortunately, when we have a very different sense of our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It doesn't always feel the same way. And it's a very dynamic, active relationship that continues to evolve over time. And it's always adjusting and modifying, and we have very different perspectives of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Think just to those individuals who were traveling out of Mitzrayim, the Dor HaMidbar, that generation that lived with Moshe Rabbeinu, with Aaron HaKohen, with Miriam HaNavia, all of them. They came out of Mitzrayim, they have a Kriyas Yamsuf, they see all the Makos, they experience everything. Vayaminu ba'Hashem v'Moshe Avdo. The Gemara, the Medrash says, Masharasa Shivcha Alayam, Lora Yecheskel ben Buzi ben Ibuaso. The greatest revelation that anyone ever had was experienced there on the occasion of Yitzias Mitzrayim. And yet that same generation in the same Parsha, Parshas Beshalach, turn to each other and they say, Hayesh Hashem b'kirbenu imayin. Is God actually a part of us? Is he here? How can that be? That's the reality of life. There are times when we ask ourselves, Hayesh Hashem b'kirbenu imayin. Is God actually involved in my life? There are other times when it's so obvious, it's so clear, when you feel his presence everywhere. Every summer, I feel very privileged that my family spends 2 weeks in Camp Simcha. For anybody who doesn't know what that is, Camp Simcha is an amazing institution. You should never need the services that they provide. But they help children who are battling cancer and chronic illnesses. And I go with my family for 2 weeks, and it's a very intense 2 weeks every summer. You have many, many kids who come over to talk about their situations and their theological questions. And it's always very intense and difficult conversations that we have. I shouldn't say we have conversations. I really just listen, and they share. I don't really have so much insight to give. It's hard to really give insight to somebody who had a perfect, beautiful, amazing life and then was struck with an illness totally unexpectedly and their whole life turned upside down only at 14 years old or at 10 years old. It's very, very difficult and painful to watch. And I remember after my first summer there, I had called my teacher in Yerushalayim, Rav Asher Weiss, and I told him that I was so shaken by the conversations that some of these girls were having with me. I didn't know where to put myself. I was so troubled. My emuna was, I just didn't understand. How can the Ribbono Shel Olam do this? You're in a concentrated environment of 120 sick children who are so pure and so beautiful, and to try to wrap your head around it, it's really difficult. It's really hard. And sometimes you have difficult conversations, and at other times you're so amazed by the faith of some of these kids. Last summer, I had such an unbelievable experience. It was so moving to me, so powerful. Every summer, they decide that on a Shabbos morning, they're going to have a question and answer session with the oldest division of campers. And I always have to make a fool out of myself and stand there and just listen to these questions. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. So, after we were finished, I learned a lot from that session, and I continue to learn from these girls. I actually walk around the entire 2 weeks. I have a pad of paper, and I write down many of the conversations I have with these girls, because I'm amazed by them. And there were two young women who came to talk to me. Both of them are 17 years old. And they said, we have something so personal that we've never shared with anyone in our family, with our closest friends. But we came to camp here, and we became really close, and we realized that we have so many shared experiences, the two of us. And we started to share things that we've never shared with others. And we were shocked to learn that both of us have the same feeling, and we wanted to talk about it. So I said, what is it? They told me, both of them have been in remission for 2 years. And both of them offer the same tefillah every single day. What is their tefillah? They both offer a tefillah every day that the Ribbono Shel Olam, that God should make them sick again. And I looked at them in shock. I didn't understand. And they said, we felt so close to the Ribono Shel Olam when we were sick. And it's a feeling and a sensation that we miss every single day since we've been healed. We're prepared to go through this again, to have that feeling. And I'm listening to 17-year-old girls and I'm saying to myself, have I ever in my life cared to have that feeling that they're describing? I don't even know what that means. I grew up in a religious home. I pretend to be a rabbi. I don't even know what they're describing. I have no idea what it means to be close to the Ribono Shel Olam. I'm so distant from that experience. There's an amazing insight in Parshas Vayelech, this week's Parsha. The Baal Shem Tov points out, the Ribono Shel Olam says, Va'anochi haster aster panei bayomahu. God says, I will hide my face. But what's interesting is, it's a double terminology. Haster aster panei, and many are bothered. What does it mean? He will surely hide his face. Haster aster panei. Sounds like a redundant statement. What is it all about? Writes the Baal Shem Tov, what it's referring to is, there are times in our lives when we feel, or when a generation feels, there's hester panim. God is hidden, we don't understand, how could he allow this to happen, why is the world unraveling the way it is? But even worse than that, says the Baal Shem Tov, is the generation where God is so hidden and removed from us that we don't even realize how removed we are. When you have a generation that is so blasé, that is so callous, that has no understanding of what a relationship could even mean, that's so much worse. That they don't even understand what they're lacking, what they're missing. That's infinitely worse than the first example. And I never really understood what this comment of the Baal Shem Tov meant until a couple of years ago. It hit me in the face. I was invited to speak in Eretz Yisrael on the second yard site of the three boys who were murdered. It's almost 10 years now. So they wanted me to come speak. I had a relationship with the families. And I get to the cemetery. I flew in just for 2 days. I got to the cemetery. I saw all three sets of parents were there. Everybody was crying. They were all hugging each other. Hundreds of people were gathered. And they tell me to sit down together with all of them. And I asked them, what's the schedule? What are we planning? What's supposed to happen? I was never at such a thing. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. So they told me, you're going to be the first one to speak. We'll start in about 15 minutes. And then all of the parents are going to share their own recollections, their reflections, their thoughts about this experience and about their children. So I was wondering, everyone's quiet. Everyone's here. I'm the first speaker. Why are we waiting 15 minutes? So I asked, who are we waiting for? So they said, well, we're going to do something before. And what happened after that was something that has been seared in my mind ever since. These three sets of parents stood up in front of hundreds of people and spent the next 15 minutes singing songs, leading the community that was gathered in 15 minutes of uninterrupted songs from Shir HaShirim, Ki Cholas Ahava Ani. Songs about how close they feel, how connected they are, and how much they feel a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam. And I sat there, and I was, I guess part of the Yerusha I get from my father is to be an emotional person. Is there a box of tissues somewhere? Inside? Oh, thank you, got it. So, I sat there and I cried. I cried not because it brought back so many horrible memories of that experience, and all of us remember that. I cried more because I said, I've never felt so distant from a relationship before, like I feel now. I have no understanding of what this means. These people whose lives have been turned upside down, whose lives have been destroyed, feel such a connection, and I am so removed from that reality. I have no idea what that connection could even mean. And to me, that was the saddest part of it. And that, says the Baal Shem Tov, is what it means. Anochi haster aster panai bayomahu. There is a Gemara Maseches Erevin. The Gemara makes an interesting comment that our world in some way is considered similar to a Bei Hilula, to a festive wedding gala celebration. And many of the commentaries struggle to understand what exactly does it mean that our world is like a wedding celebration? What about the world is like a wedding celebration? So the Rishonim, right there on the Gemara, that perhaps what it means is, before we go and attend a wedding, we have a lot of preparation. It's a lot of planning into all the details of exactly how this should unfold and what should happen and what shouldn't happen. And you go through months and months and sleepless nights and you're making your guest list and you're trying to figure out who's coming, who's not coming, the caterer. I don't know if things are as wild here as they are by us in New York. Not sure. But I'm sure there's a certain degree of planning that goes into things. And then you come to the wedding. And how long does it last? How long is the whole event? And before you know it, the whole thing is over. And you turn around and you ask yourself, all of that planning, all of those sleepless nights for 5 hours of a party? 6 hours, 7 hours. Take advantage, at least enjoy it. So the Gemara is teaching us, there are people who spend their entire lives planning, they're going to do this, they want to do that. They have all kinds of imaginations. And with all the planning, before you know it, you get older and life slips away. And you need to take advantage, says the Gemara. Take advantage of all that planning and everything that you do and all the ideas that you have. Make sure that you take advantage of all of them while you have the opportunity to do so. It's the first interpretation. When I took the job in the Young Israel of Woodmere, so the day that I officially accepted it, my Rebbe from Yerushalayim, Rav Asher Weiss, called and we were discussing it. We discussed it a lot before. And he wished me a mazel tov and he said, now I want to tell you something. He mentioned this Gemara, and he said his own insight, his own interpretation. He said, you ever been to a Hasidish wedding? Anybody here ever been to a Hasidish wedding? So when does the wedding start? It starts at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And who's there at the beginning? The close family, aunts and uncles. Then people start coming as the chuppah draws closer. Simchas Chasam Ekala, the dancing, it's jam-packed, a lot of people come, everyone's celebrating. Then it's all over and you get to the mitzvotas. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning. And who's still there at 3 o'clock in the morning? The only people who are there are the closest family. Nobody else wants to be there. Nobody else is invited to be there. It's just the closest family, that nucleus that's around you. Those are the people who are there. He said to me, you're taking on a big position, and you're going to have a lot of responsibility with members of your community, and you're going to be doing lots of things for all kinds of people and community affairs. Don't ever forget, this world is like a wedding. At 3 o'clock in the morning, the only people who are going to be there for you are your family. And don't ever neglect them. Don't ever neglect your family. Because they're the only ones who will be there. That was his insight, his interpretation. But one of the Talmidei HaBaal Shem Tov says, an unbelievable insight. He writes, what does it mean that this world is like a wedding? He suggests you go to a wedding and you walk inside of this magnificent hall and you see these beautiful centerpieces and you have a professional crew of photographers who are there making sure to get footage of everything. And you see such elaborate floral arrangements. And then you go and you see what they have at the bar and all the drinks and all the food that they're walking around with and everything. It's amazing. When does this all come to a climax? At the most important moment of the wedding, which is under the chuppah. The rabbi turns to the boy, to the young man, and he says, okay, now it's time to get serious. Forget everything else that's going on. Now we're going to get married. And he turns to him and he says, okay, take the ring and give it to the kala and say to her, Harei at mekudeshes li. Now what happens if at that moment, instead of him doing that, the groom, the chassan, starts hesitating and he says, you know, I'm not so sure I want to go ahead with this. What happens to all the guests who are there? Suddenly, everything becomes very awkward. Becomes very uncomfortable. I'll be honest, I was at a wedding during COVID. It was in somebody's backyard in Westchester, which wasn't made to have weddings in it. So there was no lighting back there. Masada Kiddushin, the rabbi turns to the chassan. I was one of the Eidei Kiddushin, so I was standing there. And he says, okay, let's get married. Give the ring to the girl. He says, Ariya Mekudeshes. He thought he put it on her finger. He didn't. It bounced off her gown and went into the grass somewhere outside. Nowhere to be found. I'm the only person under the chuppah who's under the age of 40, let's say. So I took my phone out and I start looking around on my hands and knees. Where are we going to find this? The two mothers took their shoes off and started walking around barefoot. Maybe they'll find it. Maybe they'll feel it. Nothing doing. And it was so uncomfortable. Everyone's sitting there. What do we do? Do we move on? The Kallah turns to me and says, I don't know, is this a siman min hashamayim? Is this a sign of something? It was terrible. But that's what the Baal Shem Tov explains. Imagine you come to that wedding and the chassan can't bring himself to say harayat. He just can't pull it together. Suddenly the whole experience becomes very awkward, very uncomfortable for everyone, not just for them. That's what the Gemara means. Our world is like a festive gala wedding celebration. What does that mean? The Ribono Shel Olam, God wants us to enjoy His world and take advantage of everything and have a full experience, and we should. Provided that at some point in that experience we turn around and we're willing to say to the Ribono Shel Olam, to God Himself, Harei Al Mekudeshesli. We have to be willing to say that we are married to You. There's a purpose for our being here. There's a journey that we're on. There's a reason, there's a goal, there's an opportunity that we see. But if we're never willing to say that, if we're never willing to turn around and refocus and reimagine and think about what that actually is, then of what value is our whole journey, our whole experience of life? What does it mean? Suddenly the whole experience becomes very awkward, becomes very uncomfortable. We hear a common refrain during Chodesh Elul that this month is all about Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li. Talk about our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That phrase is obviously taken from Shir HaShirim, which is a unique description, a very detailed description of what that relationship represents and how much of a love and affinity we have toward each other in both directions. God toward us toward Him. It's mutual. A beautiful story. Shir HaShirim is the description of our lives and their context in what they mean in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God Himself. So, you'll notice, if you go through Shir HaShirim, you know, every relationship has certain terms and conditions. Every professional relationship, you have certain understandings. You work in a company, what are you going to do for them? What are you not going to do? What is the expectation? You ever take a step back and ask yourself, well, in every other aspect of my life, there are expectations of the relationship. So what are the expectations here? We talk about Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li. We throw it around. People say Shir HaShirim and Erev Shabbos. Beautiful. What exactly is the expectation of this relationship? What's supposed to happen? So a very immature mind believes that it's a candy machine. So I daven in the morning. I twist around the machine after I'm finished davening, and God therefore spits out the gumball and gives me whatever I need or asked for. Of course, that's not reality. That's not what life really is. Imagine if a husband and wife had a transactional relationship and that's all it was. That wouldn't be anything to be excited about. You give me, I give you. If you make me dinner, I'll take out the garbage. Like, is that the way it should work? Come on, that's not real. That's not a real relationship. It's not the way it goes. Of course, part of our relationship is that there's a give and a take, that we all have certain responsibilities. But what exactly is our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What are the terms and conditions of that? So I've been struck by a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which is the right place to look when we talk about how our love with the Ribono Shel Olam evolves and develops. How long are we supposed to go, Rabbi? You tell me. Really? Okay. We started late. What? I have to be home tomorrow morning. So there's a pasuk in Shir HaShirim where we ask, we make a request of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mi tencha ke'achli. How do you translate those words? When will come the time that you will treat us like brothers? Now I ask you, I love my brothers and sisters, and I feel very close to all of them. We're 9 siblings. We're all very close. We love each other. We're all very different. But that's not the deepest, closest relationship that I have in my life. I love when they visit me. I love to spend time with them. But of course, the deepest, most profound relationship that I have is with my spouse. It's the person I trust most in the world. It's the person I appreciate most in the world. It's the way it's supposed to be. So what does it mean when we ask God, almost selling ourselves short? We look forward to this amazing relationship. And when will come the time that you'll finally treat us like brothers? If I was phrasing it, I would say, when will come the time that you'll treat me like a spouse? Like a loving, devoted, caring husband or wife? So why do we ask that God treat us like brothers? By the way, the Medrash wonders, which set of brothers are we aspiring to be in a relationship like? Cain and Hevel? Yitzchak and Yishmael? Yaakov and Esav? Like, who do we want to be like? Yosef and his brothers? So what is this request all about? What do we want? It's a number of interpretations that are given. One of them that's relevant to our discussion here is that perhaps when you think about the relationship of a husband and wife, of a spouse, that is one where their deepest sense of appreciation for one another, their deepest expression of love to each other, is something that is meant to be hidden and private. It's intimate, it's discreet, it's concealed. It's for their own home, for the privacy of their own home. The sensitive nature of their love and appreciation for each other does not allow them to share that in public. It would be inappropriate for them to share their deepest love in a public setting. When we're talking about brothers and sisters, when we're talking about siblings, there's nothing strange, there's nothing uncomfortable for them to show and express their deep love for each other in public. That's normal. That's normal. There's nothing strange about it at all. Were a husband and wife to do that with one another, it would be the greatest violation of their love. If they showed and expressed their most intimate way of loving each other in front of others. What we say to the Ribbono Shel Olam is, we know in our heart of hearts, we know in the depths of our understanding how much you love us. But what we ask is, Mi tencha ka'achli, when will come the time that you will go out to the world and unmask and reveal and show them how much you appreciate the Jewish people and what they stand for? We say it in Hallel. Lama yomru agoyim aye Eloheim. How many years will it take where the enemies, where all those who are looking out at the Jewish people and asking, where is their God? Does he really love them? Does he really exist? What we say in our davening Rosh Hashanah, Meloch hakol ha'olam kulo b'chvodecha. What does it mean? Of course, God runs our world today. So what do we look forward to? We look forward to the day when God will finally show the world. Not that he's running everything behind the scenes, but that he has control of everything in the world. When everyone will come to that understanding, V'yeda kol po'ol ki atah fi'alto, every human being will understand, Jew and non-Jew alike, V'yavin kol yitzur ki atah yitzarto, every human being will understand that God is the only one who runs our world. Everyone will know how much he appreciates and loves the Jewish people. That is our expectation. That is our ask of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Mi tencha ka'achli, don't only treat us like spouses and keep the love and appreciation in the privacy of our own homes, in the confines of our own environment. Allow that love to be unmasked. Allow it to spread. Allow it for others to be able to appreciate as well. That's what we ask of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now when you think about it, that's an extremely brazen request. It's a tough thing to ask for. Well, if that's our expectation, do we ever take a step back and ask ourselves, what is God's expectation of us? So there's a fascinating medrash in Parshas Va'eschanan. A few weeks ago in the Parsha, we read about Moshe Rabbeinu who is pleading for his life. All he wants is to have access and entry into the land of Eretz Yisrael. And we're told, the Gemara says in Brachos, that Moshe Rabbeinu offers 515 tefillos, 515 prayers to allow himself access into the land. I ask you, maybe somebody in this room has once had a member of their family who was ill, a situation that was painful and difficult, some kind of scenario in the journey of life that wasn't as simple as we expected it to be, and you offered a tefillah, you offered a prayer. Have you ever in your life prayed 515 times for anything? It's amazing. That's how much this meant to Moshe Rabbeinu. And he petitions over and over again. Now, we don't know exactly what he said. We don't know exactly what those conversations were all about. But the Medrash gives us insight into a little piece of it. And the Medrash writes, one conversation went as follows. Moshe Rabbeinu challenges the Ribono Shel Olam and he says, Mipnei ma, why is it fair? Atzmosav shel Yosef nechnasim la'aretz. Why is it that Yosef, who is a great Jew, has a right to go into the land? As we know, the Jewish people traveled with the coffin of Yosef and they brought it back to Eretz Yisrael with them. It was with them all the 40 years in the desert. Why is it fair that Yosef has a right to be buried in the land? Va'ani, and I, Moshe Rabbeinu, eini nechnas la'aretz, I don't have a right to go into the land. Why is that fair? Am I less than Yosef? After all, Moshe was the Adon HaNeviim. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest prophet. Moshe Rabbeinu was peh peh. He had direct communication with God himself. There was nobody greater. Lo kam b'Yisrael kemoshe. Nobody was greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. So how could it be? Asked Moshe. He understood. He had a self-awareness. He knew who he was. So how could it be that Yosef has the right to go into the land and I am less than him? Listen to an absolutely paralyzing answer that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him. Shuts down the conversation and he says, Misha hode ba'artzo, nikvar ba'artzo. U'misha eino mode ba'artzo, eino nikvar ba'artzo. What does that mean? Somebody who's proud, somebody who's comfortable with his affiliation with the Jewish people and their connection to the land of Eretz Yisrael, he has a right to go into the land. Somebody who's ashamed, somebody who's embarrassed, somebody who's uncomfortable with the fact that somebody is associating you with the Jewish people or with their origins, doesn't have a right to go into the land. Now ask the Medrash, where do you ever find this contrast? Well, let's look at two different stories. Torah tells us when Yosef is a fugitive, goes away, sent away by his family, by his own brothers, and he's terrified and he gets thrown into prison at some point. And he turns to all those who are around him and he says, I'll be very honest, I'll make a confession. Gonov gunavti me'eretz ha'evrim. I have nothing to hide. I want you all to know exactly who I am. I am a member of the Jewish people. I come from a Jewish community. I'm affiliated with a Jewish family. That's who I am. That's my essence. And I have nothing to be ashamed of. And Moshe Rabbeinu, contrasted, is also a fugitive, running for his life. He's afraid, ends up in Midian, meets the daughters of Yisro, helps them out by the well, they bring him back home, and they report to their father, Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu Miyad Arom. You know, we had this very nice Egyptian gentleman today who met us by the well, who helped us out, we were being abused, he took care of us. Says the Medrash, somebody mistakenly called you an Ish Mitzri, Behu Shomea V'Shosek? Your blood doesn't boil when somebody mistakenly refers to you as an Egyptian? You're not an Egyptian. You may have come from the land of Egypt. You're a Jew. You're a Jew. You're a Jewish person. Are you ashamed of your affiliation? Look at Yosef. Ganov gunavti me'eretz ha'evrim. I have nothing to be ashamed of. I'm proud of it. I have everything to be proud of, that I am affiliated with the Jewish people. Says the Medrash, God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I appreciate you and I love you, but you don't have a right to go into the land of Eretz Yisrael. And that was a devastating moment in the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. As we read in Parshas Va'aschanan, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, Al Tosef, you don't have a right to go in. Don't continue to petition because it's not going to work. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't allow him his request. Perhaps if we are brazen enough to ask the Ribono Shel Olam that he go out in public and show everyone his love for the Jewish people, then what is the reciprocal of that? What does the Ribbono Shel Olam ask of us? We're all living in Galus. We live in exile. We're not living in Eretz Yisrael yet. What is the job of a Jew in Galus? And it's becoming increasingly more difficult for anyone who's out in the world, and you see the anti-Israel bias, the anti-Semitism that's going on all over all of our communities. And you see as there's a rise in all of this, and there's an uptick. Are you ashamed? Are you afraid? Are you embarrassed? Are you humiliated to say that you are a part of the Jewish people? Or are you prepared to go out to the world and show them what it means to be an upstanding Jew? What it means to be somebody who's proud of the ethics, the morals, and the values that our community stands on? We have nothing to be ashamed of. We have everything in the world to be proud of. We are the ethics and morals and values that uphold the world. That's who we are. You're ashamed of it? You're embarrassed? Perhaps this is what the Ribbono Shel Olam asks us in return. I'll just close with one mashal. I know everyone has to go. It's late. The Dubna Magid tells a mashal about an individual who's living in a small town, very simple individual. People told him, they went on a business trip once, and they saw this amazing phenomenon. They saw that there are wagons that are able to move without any horses pulling them. Something spectacular. We call it today a train. This man can't believe what he's hearing. How's that possible? Where does it get energy to move? You have to go check it out yourself. You have to see it for yourself. Saves up money for months and months. Finally, he tells his family, you know, makes up a story. I have to go do a business somewhere. I'm going to have to leave for a couple of weeks. I'll be back. Nobody asks questions. They think he's going to do some deal. Goes out to the big city. He gets to the big town. And he asks around, anybody know where are these wagons that move without horses? I was looking at him like he's crazy. What are you talking about? Finally, someone understands it. Oh, you mean the train? He says, yeah, I don't know. They direct him to the train station. He gets there, he sees there are people rushing back and forth. Everyone's buying tickets. He doesn't understand, what are they buying tickets for? Taps somebody on the shoulder. He asks him, how does this work here? They said, well, if you want to go on the train, you have to have a ticket to get on. Go speak to the clerk behind the desk over there and they'll help you out. He goes and he speaks to this woman. She asks him, well, what kind of ticket would you like to purchase? He says, I don't even know what that means. What's the difference? She starts explaining to him, well, we have business class, first class, we have economy, premium economy, all different things. He doesn't really understand what it is. So she realizes that he's not following. She says, well, tell me, how much money do you have? Well, he's been saving up for months. He pulls out everything that he has in his wallet, puts it on the counter. She says, great, guess you want a first class ticket. He tells her, okay, give me the ticket. He's very excited. Where am I supposed to go? She says, well, wait over there. The train is going to come at a certain time and you'll get on. Train comes. He sees everybody's pushing and rushing, shoving to get on. And he's pushing along with them. He gets on. Nobody told him exactly how this works, so about 30 seconds into the ride, the train starts moving and he falls down. He didn't know that you're supposed to hold on to something. He didn't understand how this worked. Everybody's laughing at him. Everyone's having a great time. People are joking around. Everyone's eating, drinking, having fun. Suddenly, somebody makes an announcement. The conductor is coming around. The ticket master is coming to check everybody's tickets. Quickly, everyone hide. So he doesn't know what's happening. Looks around and he sees everybody quickly takes a suitcase, hides under the suitcase, goes under all the benches. Doesn't know what's going on. He thinks this is part of the chavaya, part of the excitement, part of the experience. So he goes to the back of the train. They have mud in the back car of the train with chickens. And he decides, let me lay in the mud, put some chickens on top. This would be like a great hiding spot. And the problem was he was too tall. So his legs were sticking out. And the conductor comes around and he starts beating him on his legs and he says to him, why are you hiding? The man turns to him and he says, why are you hitting me? And they try to have a conversation and the man says to him, well, obviously you're hiding because you don't have a ticket. He says, no, I'm hiding because everyone's hiding. And the conductor is in shock. What do you mean everyone's hiding? Where is everybody? Show me your ticket. He says, of course I bought a ticket. What do you mean? How do you think I got on here? Well, nobody hides if they have a ticket. He says, well, everybody's hiding. Of course they have tickets. He shows him his ticket and the conductor turns to him and he says, you don't just have a ticket. You have a first class ticket. What are you doing here? You're sitting in the mud with the chickens all dirty and a mess. Do you know what first class is? Let me show you to the front of the train. You can have a bed for yourself. We're going to come around and serve you meals. Anything you want to eat or drink, we're going to give you. What are you sitting back here with the chickens all dirty, ruining your clothing? Smells. Why are you here? Said the Dubna Magid, so often, living in Chutz La'aretz, we don't realize that as Jews we have a first-class ticket. It's hard to talk about the fact that we are the Am HaNivchar, the Am Segula, but we say it in our davening. Atavich hartana mikol ha'amim, ahavta osanu, v'ratzisa vanu, v'ramamtana mikol ha'lashonos. Think about the words, what does it mean? The Ribbono Shel Olam loves us. The Ribbono Shel Olam chose us. The Ribbono Shel Olam made us higher. He raises us up. Ramamtana mikol ha'lashonos v'kiddushanu b'mitzvosecha. We have a Kedusha. We have a first-class ticket to the world. We've paid a tremendous price for this privilege. Think about our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, and thousands of years of Jewish history who have paid a first-class ticket price to be the chosen people that we are. And yet, unfortunately, so often, we lose focus. And we play along with the game of the world and the society that we find ourselves a part of. And we find ourselves rolling in the mud with the chickens in the back, not realizing that's not where a first-class ticket holder should be. Yes, that's what everybody else is doing. But you paid a lot more for your trip. Your journey is a lot more valuable. You belong somewhere else. You belong in a different machlaka. You belong in a different section entirely. This is not the place for you. This is not where you should be. It's an opportunity as we come to the season of Yom Noraim, and as we think about what it means to be connected with HaKadosh Baruch Hu once again, as we reevaluate and reimagine, what are the terms of this relationship? What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from me, and what do I want from Him? What are we asking for? When we ask for all of these things on Rosh Hashanah, it's an opportunity not only to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but to turn around and ask ourselves, am I prepared to be that person who realizes that I'm holding a first-class ticket to my journey of life? And there are responsibilities that come along with that. There are expectations that come with that. And there are privileges that come with that as well. But all of that needs to be a recognition on the part of both sides of the equation. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Rosh Hashanah, as we mentioned, Maloch HaKol HaOlam Kulo B'Chvodecha. Come out to the world and show them your power. Show the world, make them appreciate what it means to have a God, what it means to have a spiritual life, what it means to have a higher calling, to live life with purpose and meaning. If that's what we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then He asks the same of us. Turn around and recognize and realize that you have a higher purpose, that you have a higher set of values and morals, that you are different, that you are the Am Segula, that Atavach Hatana Mikala Amim, that you are not the same as every other ticket holder. You are different. You're meant to live differently. You're meant to think differently. You're meant to act differently in every stage and every phase and every encounter that you have throughout the journey of your life. It's our hope. It's our wish. It's our tefillah that we have the opportunity. V'yeda kopol ki ato fialto. That every human being, but most importantly, us as the Jewish people, not the rest of the world, will have the insight, will have the ability, will have the strength to come to an understanding of what it means to develop, to appreciate, and to engage in a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a meaningful way. To be proud of who it is that we are. To say that we will be the Jews who say, Ganov gunavti ma'eretz ha'ivrim. I stand for a life of Torah. I stand for a life of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I stand for a life of values, for a life of purpose, for a life of mission. That's what I am. I have nothing to be ashamed of. I have everything to be proud of. Go to your office and look around. What are the values of all those, not all those, but many of those who are around you. What are they talking about? What are they busy with? How do they spend their weekends? And how do we spend our weekends? What do we do? What should we be doing? What kind of values do we have streaming through our homes? What kind of values are going through the homes of so many others around us, in our own community and around the world? Ashreinu, how lucky we are to be the chosen people. Kivo vachar Hashem lios l'leam segula, to be the ones that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has chosen as His nation, to be the ones who He appreciates more than anything else. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is the time to appreciate what that is all about. Ani l'dodi v'dodi li, to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day for His love, to thank Him for His attention, and to pledge to Him that we will do the same in return. I can humbly wish all of you Eksiva v'chasima tova v'imaleh Hashem kol mish'alos libeinu l'tova. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should fulfill all of our requests. He should grant us all of our needs. And I wish all of you a Shana Tova.